No trip to Indianapolis is ever complete without cleaning out your sinuses with that good old St. Elmo's cocktail sauce.
Gentlemen, welcome to the steakhouse of St. Elmo. Yes. Tonight we eat something's flesh. I want meat!
I'm going to miss a steak dinner at St. Elmo's in Indianapolis after a win.
I'm Mason King, and this is the IBJ Podcast. St. Elmo Steakhouse. There is no more iconic restaurant in central Indiana, probably the state, than St. Elmo. Its original incarnation opened in 1902. It's continually name-dropped by national sportscasters in town for the game. It's been featured prominently in TV shows like Parks and Rec. You can get it sinus-clearing shrimp cocktail sauce at grocery stores around the country. According to the publication Nation's Restaurant News, it ranks 19th among independent restaurants in the country with $21.3 million in gross sales for 2017, and it has spawned a small family of related restaurants now. The flagship Harry and Izzy's is next door to St. Elmo in downtown Indianapolis, and the relatively new concept Burger Study is right around the corner from Harry and Izzy's, and they all either abut or are part of Circle Center Mall, which has been struggling to hold on to tenants during the recent shakeup in the retail industry. So today we're going to talk about red meat. We're going to talk about retail. With me is Craig Hughes. He's president of Hughes Culinary, which operates these brands. Craig, you are also an owner in all three of these restaurant concepts.
Yeah.
I got that right so far?
You are. My title that we feel like better represents us, my dad, Steve Hughes, and I, we feel like we're stewards of St. Elmo, because that restaurant was here since 1902, and all of us that are there on a daily basis feel like we're stewards of that restaurant, operating on behalf of Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm. And we were up at the Hughes Culinary offices on the 12th floor of the PNC Center, and I am literally looking down right now on Illinois Street on St. Elmo, and it's really pretty cool view.
It is cool. Most people want the northern view towards Monument Circle and the larger skyscrapers. We wanted the view right on St. Elmo and Heron Izzy's.
There's also a giant steer on the wall of this conference center. I just noticed that.
Beef and retail.
There's a big cow on the wall. That's really pretty nice. Let me just jump right in. So let me ask you quick about Burger Study, since that's the newest of the concepts. What is the concept in a nutshell? What were you trying to put together with that?
That's a gourmet adult burger bar. And we have a lot of $70 per person restaurants in downtown Indianapolis at dinner especially, and felt like it was time not to compound that saturation with another restaurant like that, and felt like, hey, we're in the beef business, we do this really well, we know that block geographically and who it serves, and I felt like a gourmet burger bar with a liquor license and full kind of upscale atmosphere would be appropriate for that location between Bankers Life and the convention center and Lucas Oil and the downtown businesses.
So were you looking for something that you could then replicate in other locations as well?
I think so. That's in the back of your mind when you come up with a concept, if you're going to replicate it. And I would like to do another one or more for sure, but it was really specific to that location as far as the needs go.
But there is one, I think, already planned for, help me out with the name of this, it's up in Fishers, the name of this giant new
the
Fishers, culinary facility. The
yard at the Fishers District.
Yeah.
And developed by Thompson Thrift up at 116th east of I-69. So you'll see the Top Golf's up there and IKEA and Portillo's. They're opening up a retail multi-use facility. It's going to have a hotel, apartments, several restaurants, and retail in the Fishers District, and that's where we're going to go. Although we've pivoted on that piece because we're doing a 1933 lounge by St. Elmo Steakhouse up there. We feel like we need an adult cocktail area where people can decompress and have a conversation, not necessarily have that full two-hour dinner experience with big portions center of the plate. And then the real estate, we bought the real estate on the outlot in this development for originally for Burger Study, and then pulled the trigger, wanted to make an investment in Fisher's because of the growth, and have the opportunity to buy the dirt, build the building. Once we started getting into it, we're like, we're going to need to do a lot more sales than a burger place can generate to make this work. So we pivoted, and we are now doing what we're calling the HC Grill, tentatively now. The HC stands for Hamilton County. We're bidding on a Burger Study out of the Indianapolis airport in the refresh for the concessions that are going on out there in the next year or two. Mm-hmm. So hopefully we'll get one there. And Fisher's is a great market for a Burger Study. That piece of land just got a little bit too expensive to support that price point, volume-wise, for where we needed to be.
How much is it going to cost to put all that together, the HC portion?
The HC would probably be $4.5 million to do that. Yeah.
So that's a big investment.
It's a big investment, yes. Yeah. And St. Elmo, probably the 1933 lounge would be another couple million dollars in a smaller space.
Let me ask you about Burger City back down here. How's it been going so far?
It's going well. It's we are not quite a year into it. We opened up in September of 17. And so we're going through the seasonalities of it all, and excited to have that first year in there. I think we set a sales range on our pro forma, and I'd say we're within that range, so acceptability, but it's on the lower side. So we're going to work and try to build up those sales, just like we did with here in Izzy's. And we opened that up in 2007. Doing about $5 million in sales, and now we're knocking on $12 or $13 million in sales there. So it's a build, it's a process to get your restaurant established and get that clientele built up, and so we're doing that with Burger Study now.
So what are the sales for Burger Study?
I think we're trending towards $3 million right now.
Annual.
An annual. We haven't been an annual yet, but that's what we're looking for.
Okay, so you
and I projected 4 on the high side. So yeah.
What did you kind of find out about this concept as you actually kind of played it out in reality?
You know, the interesting thing, coming from a classic steakhouse, dinner only, with a large wine cellar and all these expense accounts, and here in Izzy's is maybe a slightly different version of that, but still a high price point item. You get into burgers only, and it's like, whoa, we just did a similar amount of guests that we do on the here in Izzy's North, but our sales are one third or a quarter of that. And of course we knew that in the planning stages, but as you still see the sales reports come in on a daily basis, weekly, monthly, it's still like, wow, that was a lot of burgers served for the dollar.
So if you do $3 million in sales for your first year, is that profit? Or not is that profit, but is that profitable?
Yeah, I mean, that's right. That's right there, break even, which is kind of what you best you're going to break even in your first year. So, yeah, the restaurant's a slow trot to get to profitability. And as you pay off your debts and work all that down, and you build up your sales and you become more efficient, the first year of any business is your least efficient year, with labor and people learning the positions, and then you can kind of dial it in, and people be their capacity to do more with less broadens, and so typically with here in Izzy's and the other restaurants, the three here in Izzy's that we've had, it takes a little while to get into the profitable period of time.
Yeah, is there a synergy between those three restaurants, between St. Elmo, Harry and Izzy, and Burger Study, that actually makes it easier or more economical to run Burger Study?
Yeah, not so much a physical benefit to it, because they all have their separate inventories, their separate kitchens, they have separate management. But to have it right under our nose and our supervision of the restaurant, to know who to hire, and just that, to go, if we were to take a restaurant to Cleveland or Nashville, Tennessee or something, there'd be a lot more, it'd be cumbersome for us to monitor that and make the right decisions.
I don't know what to call this trend. I guess I would generally call it the high-end burger trend. Did you get into this and open Burger Study and go, whoa, wait a second, there are a lot of places that are selling hamburgers now, or was that not a concern?
Oh, I knew it. I mean, 5 years ago, I thought there were a lot of burger places, as you did too, I'm sure. And But there wasn't one really in the downtown business district that did kind of that gourmet table service burger with a bar, and that was missing. There's locations obviously on Mass Avenue and in Fountain Square and out by the canal, but there really wasn't that type of format.
Now, speaking of a crowded market,
yeah.
So okay, by my count, and I know I'm missing somebody, there are 10 other steakhouses within 3 blocks.
Yeah, of, I think you are missing
some.
I've heard higher numbers.
And Harry and Izzy. I'm not counting Tony's, which is, I guess, still under development. Mm-hmm. But there are 10, at least 10 open steakhouses. There are a couple places like Capital Grill I'm not counting, even though they do maybe serve that customer.
Oh, yeah, that's a total steakhouse.
Is it a total steakhouse?
Yeah.
Okay, that's 11.
Yes.
How does that
you
even
probably
happen?
Didn't throw in Fogo de Chao? Or,
I did.
Oh, you did?
I included Fogo.
Okay.
So my first question is, how does that even happen?
Yeah.
What is it about a market?
No, it's a trend, I guess, and I don't know if it's sustainable. I don't like that reflection on the city of Indianapolis that it feels like, as a resident like you are, that the only kind of restaurants that we can make successful here in Indianapolis are steakhouses, because that is not the case, and I don't know why it's becoming so saturated. I certainly wouldn't take St. Elmo and open it up in another market. If we were to do that, should have done that 25 years ago, not today. It's way overcooked in that category.
Yeah, I mean, you're surprised that there hasn't already been some shakeout.
Yeah, well, Moe's, I think, closed recently. And yeah, I think there will be some shakeout. The category is only so large. And I know that people like steakhouses, especially people that travel, and you have predominantly men on some of these business trips. That's changing for sure. And they feel comfortable in a steakhouse environment, talking business or doing whatever in the expense account category. But more and more, it's becoming very female-oriented. That's why we bolted on the 1933 Lounge a few years ago to really kind of change who we are, be more open to different type of customers. But yeah, it's crowded for sure, and I don't know what the future holds.
Does that change what you guys do at all, knowing that you have that much similar competition?
We try to use a restaurant opening up. For example, when Ruth's Chris opened up back in the 90s, late 90s, to sharpen our skill set and look at what we do and how we can do it better. So it's really just a motivator to kind of stay on top of your game when you have a new competitor come in, and really we look more at ideas when I travel or other people in the company travel, and they might see some things that are being done in San Francisco or New York or Miami, and try to grab an idea. Or modify an idea. It's really how you assemble those ideas into a product brand.
Yeah, do you think the market can absorb any more?
Restaurants do better around other restaurants. It's similar to car dealerships do better around other car dealers. Furniture stores do better around other furniture stores. Law offices. when you have two lawyers, it becomes an enterprise, right? Ours is the same way. And to have downtown Indianapolis so vibrant and successful and see this growth that's happened over the last 20 or 30 years has been good. The thing about St. Elmo is each one that comes from out of town, each brand that comes from out of town, really just magnifies that St. Elmo Steakhouse is an original to Indianapolis. It's Indianapolis's steakhouse. It's been there for over 100 years. And so when you have a brand from out of town coming into this market, I think they tend to slice the pie made up from the out-of-town steakhouses more than they do from the ones that are the locally based ones.
So Circle Center Mall, part of which is right on the backside of St. Elmo and Harry and Izzy, opened in 1995, is managed and partly owned by Simon Property Group, which, as we all know, is based in Indianapolis, one of the largest developers of retail real estate and shopping centers in the world. When Circle Center opened, one of its anchor stores was Nordstrom, which shared this block with St. Elmo and Harry and Izzy. It closed in 2011. And so Simon has taken kind of a piecemeal approach to filling that space. It has added restaurants and entertainment venues that also offer food. Burger Study obviously is one of them. And Burger City faces Georgia Street, which was remodeled as kind of a public gathering space for the Super Bowl in 2012, and it stayed pretty much that way. And we should also mention Circle Center has been struggling to fill a lot of vacancies, as we've seen a big shakeout in the retail industry. For example, the other anchor, Circle Center, Carson's, just closed a few months ago. In your eyes, what is the state of Circle Center right now? How do you see it?
The strategy of changing out ground floor retail into restaurants has worked out really well. The second, third floor has struggled the most. Third floor, that's what's happening in the retail industry is restaurants don't really succeed well on second and third floors. You got to have curb appeal, you have to have visibility, you have to have ease of access. And so while that solution worked on ground level, it's not going to work anymore on second and third floor. I'd love to see something completely transformational happen on the second and third floor of Circle Center and make an appeal to the city's thinkers and idea people to come up with something. If you think about that real estate, I mean, between the Georgia Street that's been remodeled in the Super Bowl and Washington Street, Meridian to the east and Illinois to the west, that's pretty tremendous real estate. Those addresses are amazing. And I don't think that the retail mix that's on the second or third floor is adding a ton of value. I feel like it's being underutilized for the magnitude of that great real estate. Let's do something transformational. Mm-hmm.
You mean go away from the retail concept altogether and do something different?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. What would that be?
I mean, I really don't know. I mean, it's great real estate. It's a good building. If we can get some multi-use, if you could put condos in there and make this indoor plaza that had secured cool condos that overlooked Meridian and Illinois Street, some great properties, something. If the convention center could somehow piggyback onto that space, it is connected, and use it for an expansion of the convention center or something. I don't know what the answer is, Mason, but I think the city's administration should have this on the front burner as something that is an important part of Indianapolis because of its location and its high profile.
Are you concerned about its current condition?
Yeah, I mean, it's coming around. We have a new mall manager in place now, still with Simon, but I think he's done a good job, and we just got to get escalators working, elevators working, just the heat working, things like that. I mean, it's frustrating that some of those things have been slow to get repaired. We pay a tremendous amount of rent here in Izzy's, for example. I mean, all in, I think we wrote checks for $600,000 last year to Simon. So we have high expectations for fountains working and escalators working and things like that, because that's what we're paying common area maintenance fees for and rent. I know Simon, the people at Simon are aggressive and smart, and when it becomes important to them and important to the city, there'll be some progress made, I hope.
I mean, do you see the mall really contributing at all to?
Really, it's more of an address for us. The contribution for our businesses are the parking is nice. It's right below ground. It's easy. It's pretty well maintained and well lit, safe, secured. So it's a great parking facility in Indianapolis. And then downtown workers and people that live and work downtown use the mall to kind of navigate their way as pedestrians. I'm sure you do from your office. Mm-hmm. And so on those rainy days or days like we're having right now where it's 95 degrees, I'll cut through the mall and use the air conditioning. And that's been great. But as far as guests coming into the mall to shop and then coming into our restaurants, that's not a significant benefit to us.
Did you see any effect of any kind when Carson's closed?
No.
On your business?
No, we haven't seen anything. We didn't see anything when Nordstrom closed. I'm shocked by that. Our sales have continued to do well here in Izzy's, as a true mall tenant.
What would you like to see done with that Carson space?
I really don't know what should go in there. I do know it provides an opportunity for the community to think about it now that space is a significant opportunity.
And again, like we discussed, the strategy for backfilling an Orchard space, besides the office component for the Indianapolis Star, you have a couple of just flat out restaurants, and you've got a couple of entertainment places that also have food. Mm-hmm. Is that vexing at all, or is that really neither here nor there for you?
It's not. I guess Helium Comedy Club's going to go in.
Yeah.
Also, another entertainment space by the Punch Bowl Social and the Indianapolis Star. And that'll be a neighbor to Burger Study. So I think that'll be helpful. Retail struggling. We're at a saturation point probably with restaurants. So some other uses would be good, I think. And there needs to be a reinvestment back into it of sorts, right?
Into the kind of mall proper.
Yeah, yeah. And not just maybe a remodel of changing some entrances and doing things. It probably needs a significant game-changing strategy employed there. I'm not sure what it is, though, but I'm sure there's smarter people than I am out there giving it some thought.
Well, that was great. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Okay, my thanks again to Craig Hughes. Our inspiration for the interview this week was a story in IBJ's print edition about the current state of Circle Center. Reporter Scott Olson has the latest financial figures for the mall, which are looking up. Sales per square foot, one of the most important metrics for a shopping mall, ticked up in 2017. And profit rose nearly 19%, although most of that was due to something completely unrelated to the operation of the mall. Its property tax rate went down. Scott asked Simon Property Group for its take on the mall's performance, but Circle Center's general manager didn't respond to his request for comment. You can check out the story in this week's print edition of IBJ, or you can find it, of course, at IBJ.com. Hey, thanks for listening to the IBJ podcast. This is Mason King, and we'll be back next week.